Our guest today is Bernie Sanders, the independent congressman from Vermont. After serving as mayor of Burlington, Vermont from 1981 to 1989, Sanders won his first term to the House of Representatives in 1990. He was the first independent elected to the House in 40 years and now has gone on to become the longest-serving independent in U.S. history. During his time in Washington, Congressman Sanders has been a progressive stalwart, fighting for legislation on veterans' benefits, workers' rights, and environmental protections, among many, many other things. In 1991, he helped found the Progressive Caucus, a group of over 50 lawmakers dedicated to advancing economic and social justice. Most recently, and how I've come to know him quite well over the past few years, Bernie Sanders has become one of the leading advocates for media reform in the House and in the Congress. Indeed, I would say he is the leader of the concern that members of Congress are showing in this fight. This year, in 2003, Congressman Sanders has led the fight against corporate concentration of media by organizing significant opposition both inside and outside Washington against the FCC's recent decisions to lift media ownership limits or to relax them. It is my great privilege and honor to welcome Bernie Sanders to Media Matters today. Congressman Sanders?
Bob, it is very nice to be with you, and I want to tell the listeners that not only I'm sure that you do a wonderful talk show, that you have at the grassroots level, along with John Nichols and a few other people, been one of the leaders in this country in making people aware of the issue of corporate control over the media and media consolidation. You've had tremendous success, and I just want to thank you for all of the efforts that you've made on that very important issue.
Well, thanks a lot, Bernie. Bernie, you know, one of the things I've had a chance to talk to you over the years at some length, especially in the last couple of years, not just about media issues, but about how politics work in this country, how the Congress works. And one of the things that's been striking to me as I've had a chance to talk to you and to work with members of Congress more is to learn how Congress works. I mean, I think it's really not something that most Americans are familiar with. They don't know if they have a real sense of...
Well, you're absolutely right. They don't. And it gets back to some degree to the very horrendous job that the corporate media does in explaining when issues come up, how people can impact upon issues. There are... more often than not, major votes in the U.S. Congress, and people don't even know when those votes are coming about. They don't know how their members vote on it. But the bottom line is that you're right. Most people have not a clue about how Congress functions.
Yeah, what would be some of the things, if you just could give a list of the handful of things everyone ought to know that they don't know about Congress, from your experience now, seven terms in the U.S. House of Representatives?
The Congress is a very, very complicated institution. And one of the reasons it's so complicated is to really make it difficult for people to understand how they can impact upon decisions. For a start, you have two overall processes. One is called authorization. So you'll have a vote on how much money should be authorized, say, for financial aid for college education, Pell Grants. And then people will vote for authorization, but what is actually appropriated is very different than what's authorized. In other words, Congress often runs on two sets of books: the maximum amount that can be spent, but really what is actually spent. They're very different, and obviously the appropriations, the real dollars, are much more important. Second of all, people probably don't know. I certainly didn't know it until I got to Congress. The following truth: a bill passes the House, and everyone sends out a press release and says, okay, the bill passed the House. Another bill passes the Senate. Okay, people send out press releases. Senator Jones did a fantastic job in doing such and such. Then the bill goes to a conference committee. Most ordinary Americans would say, okay, the House and the Senate will work out their differences, and they'll come up with some compromise. Right, Bob?
That's right.
You know, the House votes $10 billion, the Senate votes $12 billion, we'll end up with $11 billion. Completely wrong. The process starts absolutely, virtually from zero, not quite, but almost from zero. The conference committee, which is by and large controlled by the leadership, will do whatever the hell they want to do, and then they will bring the bills back to the House and Senate, which could be very, very different from the original bill that the House passed or the original bill that the Senate passed. For example, on the issue that you have been working so hard for a number of years, on media reform, as you know, the United States Senate passed a resolution of disapproval regarding the horrendous FCC decision, which would allow for more media consolidation, right? Meanwhile, in the House of Representatives, we did not go as far, but we passed a resolution, a piece of legislation, a bill, amendment, that would rescind giving networks the ability to control 45% of the viewing audience and bring it back to 35%, etc. The conference committee met. The issue that the Senate dealt with was completely denied, and essentially a very weak, bad so-called compromises had been worked out. So they really didn't reach a middle ground. They did pretty much what they wanted to do. And that happens on many, many issues. The point here is that the leadership is able to exert enormous influence over the process above and beyond what the members of both bodies want.
So being the dominant party, the majority party, and therefore being able to be the leadership in the House and the Senate, by what you're saying, is really crucial, that those people who run the House and Senate and the majority party, in this case the Republicans on both sides, have much greater power than just one more vote.
Absolutely. And many people don't understand that. For example, I wonder how many of the listeners know that every single chairman of every committee is, by definition, part of the majority party, which is the Republican Party. So sometimes people will say, well, gee, why don't you bring up the bill on the floor of the House? Let's do that. No, you can't do that. You cannot bring up a bill before a committee unless a chairman allows that bill to be brought up. For example, we have been working very, very hard on this so-called USA Patriot Act, which I think is a disaster for civil liberties and constitutional rights in America. We've got a lot of support for a particular section, Section 215, that would do away with the ability of the FBI to come into our libraries and bookstores and monitor what we're reading. If that bill were to get to the floor of the House, it would pass, in my judgment. We would have some Republican support for it, a lot of Democratic support. The chairman refuses to allow it to go through his committee, and that's it. The chairman doesn't want it. It ain't going to move. In addition to that, just getting no bill gets to the floor of the House unless Tom DeLay says it's okay for that bill to come to the floor of the House. So,
and Tom DeLay is the Republican leader in the House.
Tom DeLay is arguably the most right-wing leader of the U.S. House of Representatives that we have seen in God knows how many years. And if DeLay says, nope, that legislation ain't coming onto the floor of the House, that bill is not coming onto the floor of the House. So your point is absolutely right. The leadership exercises enormous power. The only way to circumvent that is they force a vote by what is called a motion to discharge. And that means that if a majority of the members of the House, 218 members, sign a petition that says we want thus and such bill on the floor of the House for a vote, we can do it that way. That is very, very difficult to do because the House leadership would bring tremendous pressure on those members of the majority who signed that. But it is possible to do, but it's very difficult.
We're talking to Bernie Sanders, U.S. Representative from Vermont, today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is a live show, so the phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in and talk with Bernie Sanders, the number here is 333-9455. The toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. Representative Bernie Sanders is the founder of the Progressive Caucus in Congress. He's been a nationally known progressive figure even before entering the House of Representatives, and has been a leader, if not, in fact, I would argue the leader of the movement in Congress to address media concentration and corporate control over the media for his entire tenure in the House. And that's why he is our guest today. But it is fair game to ask him any question you wish about politics and how the House works and what the issues of the day are. So please do call in. Bernie, one other point on general stuff before we get into specific issues. I think a lot of people always talk about the power of big money over politicians and the political process, and I think it's understood intuitively, if not with a great deal of evidence by most Americans. This is a very serious issue. You've been in Congress now 14 years. Are these concerns about the role of big money and special interest influencing policy overblown, or are they accurate?
No, they're understated. That is the dominant issue. When I talked before about nothing getting onto the floor, without the Republican leadership okaying it, when you look at their agenda, what comes to the floor and what doesn't come to the floor, basically everything that they push is on behalf of corporate America and big money interests. And the power of big money over the political process, Bob, it just cannot be underestimated. I have been working very, very hard on the issue of prescription drugs. In the United States, we pay by far the highest prices in the world for the same exact medicine that is sold for a fraction of the price in Canada and other countries, vast majority of the people, overwhelming majority of the people, want to see us lower the cost of prescription drugs. The pharmaceutical industry, with hundreds of millions of dollars behind them, huge campaign contributions, advertising, lobbying, has been able to stop that effort year after year after year. Whether the issue is the need to move away from fossil fuel and nuclear power into sustainable energy, we can move tomorrow in a very, very significant way to break our dependence upon fossil fuels, develop solar energy in a big way, wind power, hydrogen, fuel cells, hydro energy. We can do that. We can make a radical change in energy, but the energy companies are so powerful that that's been very difficult to bring about as well. So whether it's the issue of raising the minimum wage from the abysmal, pathetic $5.15 an hour, well, that's something that the McDonald's people and the Walmart people don't want. That hasn't even gotten to the floor of the House. National health care, we're the only country in the industrialized world, the only country, that doesn't provide health care for all of their people, and the insurance companies have said, no, we can't do that, therefore we're not doing that. So, Bob, to me, to understand anything about politics in America, if I were teaching politics 101, the first issue that you have to talk about is the power of money, which is then tied into the power of the media, power of lobbying. You add it all together, and ordinary citizens and working-class people have very little say about developing the agenda in Washington that's largely dominated by big money interests.
We're talking to Bernie Sanders, the representative from Vermont, who's our guest today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Bernie Sanders has been a leader on a wide range of progressive issues in the U.S. Congress and has been, in my view, the leader for years now of the movement to address media policymaking, to address the corporate concentration of ownership in our media system. Bernie, we've got a full bank of phone lines. Now let's go to some of our callers. Line one, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
I kind of have to take issue with your big money theory. I'd like to put it as an example. The people who call your home during dinner,
telemarketers
who call you. The thing is, we can't move very much on issues where some people kind of want something. But when 50 million Americans said, listen, we're tired of being disturbed at home, you saw how the Congress snapped, too. It didn't matter how much money those people gave. When 50 million Americans said, enough, we had enough, our Congress snapped, too. I mean, they were up all night, night sessions, working their butts off. Why? Because they knew a bunch of people really wanted something. When some people kind of want something, you kind of get a little something from the Congress. But when a bunch of people really want something, and they make it very clear that they want one thing and not kind of a broad range of maybe little solutions here and there, things happen.
Well, the answer is yes and no. I mean, I think in this one, the average American is totally outraged, as you indicated, by constant telephone calls telling us which telephone company we need and so forth and so on. And it became good politics for the President of the United States to stand up to them. So you're right. On some occasions, it happens. But I would argue if you did a poll today and you said to the American people, should we raise the minimum wage above $5.15 an hour? I would say about 80% of the people would say yes.
Okay, if you gave them the same poll and said, do you want to pay additional for everything that you buy because we raised the minimum wage, let's see what answer you'd get then.
But you see, we can talk about implications. I would argue that in many cases you're not going to be paying more when you raise the minimum wage. A lot of studies would suggest that that is not,
yeah,
in fact, the
case.
But the point is, you know, you can argue then, gee, if we do away with telemarketing, our economy will suffer and we will lose jobs. I mean, it depends on how you phrase the question. But I would say on issue after issue, should we lower the cost of prescription drugs in America and not pay the highest prices in the world? What percentage of people in America would vote yes, let's do something?
Yeah, but do you want to pay it in taxes instead?
No, you're not paying it in taxes. I mean, you know, you could phrase what I'm arguing. I mean, you could phrase anything you want to phrase. But you could phrase it as, should we stop the pharmaceutical industry?
It all comes from us. And the question is, how do you want to pay for it?
No, it does not come from us. The pharmaceutical industry is year after year the most profitable industry in America, on occasion paying $100 million to CEOs, and they charge us the highest prices in the world.
Okay.
They can make money, and they can substantially lower their prices.
Which drugs come out of Yugoslavia? Which drugs come out of Germany?
But the Yugoslavians...
Caller, please let the guest answer the question before you weigh in again.
But what the caller should know is that as a taxpayer in this country, He is spending billions of dollars, part of what the American taxpayers contribute, to the pharmaceutical industry for research, for development, for clinical trials, and, in fact, for tax breaks to that industry. And that is one of the substantial reasons why we develop new drugs in this country. And the caller should also know that there are huge numbers of people, we don't know exactly how many, but in the thousands, who die because they cannot afford paying the highest prices in the world for their prescription drugs. And the reason that we have not done what every other country on earth has done is that in one way or another regulated the cost of prescription drugs is because of the power of the pharmaceutical industry. So to answer your question, yes, we do not live in a fascist country. On occasion, when people come together, they can make change. The issue of telemarketing is one. But I would say on issue after issue after issue, big money, in fact, prevails.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Line two, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders, representative from Vermont.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, Bernie. Really glad to be able to ask your question. Listen, what's going on with the overtime pay provisions? I know that the president was looking forward to, robbing people of time and a half, and I know there was sort of a backlash against that. What's going on with that now? Well, and also the Employee Free Choice Act. Could you please speak to that? Is that going to be introduced at all?
Okay. In terms of the overtime, the bad news is that
Bernie, maybe give a little background for listeners who aren't up to speed on this issue, if you could.
Yeah, why don't you talk about the overtime issue. The White House, getting back to money in politics, at the behest of corporate America, decided, despite the fact that the average American today is working longer hours for low wages, despite the fact that millions and millions and millions of Americans depend upon overtime in order to earn the income that they need to pay their bills, because you're paid time and a half after 40 hours a week, the president decided to come up with a formulation that would, in fact, cut overtime pay by changing job categorization for millions and millions of workers. I think there have been some estimates that up to 11 million workers would lose their overtime pay. There was some resistance in the Senate, but in fact that resistance died, and my understanding is that, unfortunately, the president is going to get his way.
Okay, let's go to another caller. We're talking, by the way, with Bernie Sanders, the U.S. Representative from Vermont, if you just tuned in late. And we do have phone lines open. If you'd like to call in and have a question for Representative Sanders, the number is 333-9455. The toll-free number, and the toll-free line is open, is 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now. You're on the air with Representative Bernie Sanders.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Okay, I just want to know, where are the antitrust laws in all this conglomeration of businesses and industries?
That is an excellent question. And once again, this gets back to money and politics. If you just look about what's going on with Walmart in America and the degree to which they control one commodity after another commodity and have the dominant lion's share in so many areas of American life, you would think that antitrust would be used. You would think that antitrust might be involved in some media conglomerations. The answer is there's almost no antitrust activity taking place on part of the Attorney General's office. And the end result of that is that in industry after industry after industry, you're seeing fewer and fewer large corporations controlling what goes on, whether it's financial services, whether it is media, the area that Bob has been so involved in, that I've been involved in, whether it's insurance. You are seeing just a few companies control the marketplace.
Is the Attorney General getting paid off not to process these?
No, in America we don't work it that way. People do not get dollar bills or $1,000 bills slipped under the desk. The way it works is through campaign contributions.
Mm-hmm.
So that in Washington, D.C. or in California, I was out in California just the other day, and I was reading in the newspaper that Governor Schwarzenegger held a meeting to raise some money, and you had, I think it was 500 people coming out contributing $20,000 a piece from the auto industry and so forth and so on. And that's the way things get done. It's legal. I mean, we just have, in this country, money is able to buy politicians legally through campaign contributions. That's the way it's done.
Okay, well, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling. Now, Bernie, let me ask you about this antitrust question, and you referred to it or answered it talking not only about media but really the entire economy. Now, this seems to be a case where actually the statutes and the books are appropriate to much more rigorous application, but just the willpower isn't there politically to enforce the laws that we actually already have. Isn't that the case?
Absolutely. I mean, we probably need more law, but in fact, the Attorney General's office is very disinclined to stand up to the big money interests who control industry after industry and often engage in collusion and work together to charge people more money than they should be forced to pay or, in one way or another, control the market.
Now, we're talking, of course, about Attorney General Ashcroft in the Republican administration. He came in after two terms of Bill Clinton and the Democrats. Were the Democrats markedly better on antitrust issues than the Republicans have been?
No, I wouldn't say markedly better, probably better, but not markedly better. The Democrats and Clinton, you know, I think Clinton was certainly a much better president than George Bush, but certainly on trade issues.
Wait a second, I got to stop you there, Bernie. Is there someone who's been a worse president in your view than George W. Bush?
I would say that, and I don't know that I would have told you this 3 years ago, but I think the record will show that Bush is the most right-wing president, more so than Ronald Reagan, and certainly in the modern history of this country. More beholden to corporate interests, more active in denying people their right to civil liberties. And I was just talking to somebody this morning, as a matter of fact, about what went on in Miami a couple of weeks ago in terms of the protest against the so-called free trade of the Americas. And this guy was telling me, I knew it was bad, but I hadn't realized it was this bad, that the amount of police power and military power there was there to intimidate those people who protested against the so-called free trade agreement was just incredible. And you know, the word is out from the government, whether it's the USA Patriot Act or police surveillance and military action when people are opposing this or that legislation, that dissent is something we're going to have to fight to maintain.
We're talking to U.S. Representative Bernie Sanders today in Media Matters. We have a couple phone lines open. The number is 333-9455. Our toll-free line's open, so Chicago, let's get with the program here, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. You're on the air with Representative Bernie Sanders.
Representative Sanders, do you believe that you can legislate enlightenment?
Do I believe we can legislate enlightenment?
Yes.
No, I don't think you can legislate enlightenment, but I think we can create a culture in which our values become values in which we want
to. Well, now, when you say our values, you're losing me there, because look, recently the FCC and the Congress voted to let Fox and CBS have a few more television stations ownership. Well, it seems to me that all of the affiliates are carrying their programming, you know, 100% pretty much. What is the difference between who owns that station?
Okay, that's a good question. And by the way, when we talk about values, it's not my values or your values or General Electric's values, who owns NBC. What it is about is allowing different points of view to be heard. It's allowing differences of opinion. I would argue very strongly that what you see on TV, in terms of news, in terms of programming, the amount of violence, if you turn on TV on any given night, just flip the channels, you can see people getting killed every other minute. The vast majority of the people have never seen anybody killed in their lives. What you will never see, or almost never see on television, are programming, for example, about how people can work together to improve the quality of life in their communities. Give you just a couple of examples. In America, if you're a member of a trade union, you make 30% more than somebody doing the same work as you would who's not a member of a trade union. Have you ever seen a program on television suggesting to people how they can come together to form a trade union? The United States is the only country in the industrialized world without a national health care program. You very, very rarely see that reality discussed, despite the fact that we spend twice as much per person on health care. So what I'm suggesting is that programming in general, not 100%, I don't mean to suggest that, but brings forth a certain type of value structure which certainly supports the values of big money interest in corporate America and the things that they want to see happen.
Caller, do you want to do a follow-up?
Those are more, what I'm trying to get at is whether or not you believe ownership or ideology plays a bigger role in influencing the content of the media. And
And if it is the dominant ideology, which I think I hear you saying, which is sort of a capitalistic system in our society, don't the masses sort of have to, a lot of them, approve of the hegemonic forces that are already dominating them? In other words, people like to go to McDonald's, and they like to wear Nike sneakers. And so, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying, and you're making a good point, but it's a catch-22. If, you know, that argument sometimes is taken over to, for example, used as an example of why only right-wing and extreme right-wing programming exists on talk radio, right? Well, gee, people must like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and G. Gordon Liddy and Oliver North and all these other guys. Otherwise, they wouldn't listen to it. But what I can tell you from personal experience, Bob McChesney can tell you, there are many progressive people who are witty, who are funny, who are good talk show hosts. You know what? They are not allowed to be on the air because the owners of those stations do not want that point of view heard. Therefore, when people never get a chance to hear that point of view, they can't say that they would prefer it because they've never heard it. If you follow what I'm saying? So when you have one more or less dominant ideology which is out there all of the time, you say, well, people didn't like it, they wouldn't watch it, they wouldn't listen to it. Yeah, that's true. But on the other hand, they're really not getting exposure to other points of view as well.
Right. That, which would be kind of like the BBC and paternalistic system, where we have a system that exposes people to different ideas and philosophies for just for that sake, even though you know they might like more popular tastes. I do tend to agree with you that it's nice when we can have. I like this show, for example, but I know to tune in on my webcast. I live in New York, and I know when to tune in, and I wouldn't have had that opportunity, you know, 10 years ago.
No, you're right, and certainly the web has opened up. You're absolutely right. The web is a very important development that has opened up a lot of alternative opportunities for a large number of people. But the reality remains that the vast majority of the people continue to get their news, if you like, from commercial television, and that particular medium is dominated by corporate interests.
You know, Bernie, let me follow.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'll let some other callers get in here.
Well, yeah, thank you very much for calling. And next time, New York caller, I might add, use our toll-free number and save yourself some money.
It's okay. I have an internet phone, so I get unlimited calling.
Okay. If you're the president of the company, you're advertising for it. Okay. Well, thank you for calling.
I'm not.
Okay. Bernie, let me follow up on that. You raised an issue about public broadcasting, and I know this is something you've thought a lot about because in other countries, and he referred to Britain, but it's true in Canada and most of Europe and India and Japan, the countries have large public broadcasters, well-funded, oftentimes with very little commercialism on them. What is your take on public broadcasting? Should there be something like that in the United States?
Yeah, the answer is there should. Look, any entity, whether it's the BBC or the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation or anybody else, is subject to criticism and valid criticism. No institution that I know is perfect. But I think for a start, what we do want is an institution, media institution, which is as independent as it can be, i.e., it is independent of corporate interests, it is independent of government, it is independent of interest which will bend it one way or the other. Given the fact that every human being in the world will have their own set of values and their own point of view, you're not going to find perfection. But I think in institutions like the BBC, and in that case, they are funded by fees that people pay when they get their TVs, or the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which is, I expect, funded primarily by the government, at least what you have is an institution which is independent of corporate interests. In other words, when they do a story, they don't have to look over their shoulders and say, uh-oh, the advertisers don't like this. The people who own my station don't like this. They can go forward independently. Now, as you know, Bob, in England right now, there's a lot of furor over the BBC. The Labour Party is very angry about the kind of coverage that the BBC has provided on the Iraqi situation. Very upset. The BBC is very upset at them. On the other hand, what we do know, is that large numbers of Americans, out of their disgust with corporate America's media's coverage of the Iraqi war, have turned to the BBC, have turned to the Canadian Broadcasting Company. I'm calling you right now, an hour away from the Canadian border, and we get Canadian television here. And what I can tell you is the Canadian slant on the war in Iraq, very different than the American coverage, and you get a different point of view. So to answer your question, what I believe we should have is not the kind of public broadcasting that we have right now, which receives some federal money, but is mostly dependent upon corporate money. It's dependent upon the oil companies, you know, the Exxon View and Wall Street and so forth and so on. What we need is an entity which is 100% federally funded and to be run by an independent board, as independent as they can be from all political parties and doing the best that they can.
Thank you very much, Bernie. We're talking to Bernie Sanders today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We have a full bank of callers. I promise all three of you who are currently waiting, we will get to you, so please be patient. Let me say, though, before we go back to the phone lines, that the next 2 weeks, our guest here on Media Matters, 1 week from today will be Paul Krugman, the New York Times columnist and Princeton economist, and 2 weeks from today, David Korn, the Nation Magazine's Washington correspondent. Both Krugman and Korn have new books out that they'll be talking about, dealing with politics and media today. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line three, you're on the air with Representative Bernie Sanders.
Hello. I would just like to ask you, since you are someone with long and quite successful experience in government, what would you say would be the most effective actions that Americans can take if they'd like to try and help work together and help to make some of the improvements in our society that you've discussed? That's really what I'd like to know.
Well, thank you for that question. And by the way, before I go further, let me give a little bit of a self-advertisement here. We have a very good website, Bob, which covers media and many, many important issues that Congress deals with, and that's bernie.house.gov, www.bernie.house.gov. And we got a whole lot of visitors, and I hope people will check us out.
You know, Bernie, before you go on, let me say that we have a weekly emailing we send out to all our listeners who want it that we give all the sort of information. We give your bio, we give your website. So anyone who wants to just be on our weekly email, it gives all this type of information. Just email my producer, Victor Picard, and Victor's email address is vpicard, V-P-I-C-K-A-R-D, at uiuc.edu, and we'll get you the weekly email. They'll give you all the stuff so you don't have to write it down anymore. Okay, go ahead, Bernie.
Okay, the caller asked a very simple but fundamental question. What do we do? If we're concerned about making political changes, social changes, economic changes, what do we do? And I think the fundamental answer is we have to change our political culture. And that is, we have to, in the deepest possible sense, understand that politics is not just a spectator sport. It's something that people have got to actively participate in. And I know many folks who are concerned about the war in Iraq or the USA Patriot Act, or they go out to a demonstration once a year or twice a year, and they say, well, I'm politically active. I went to that demonstration. That's fine. That's important. Demonstrations are very essential to getting our word out and showing the leadership of this country how we feel. But we have to be involved in more than just demonstrations. We have to work on these things 365 days a year. What many people don't understand is they really can have a very significant impact on the political process. While the other side, in my view, the corporate interests, have untold sums of money, their political perspective is really a minority perspective. And I think the vast majority of the people of this country, the middle class, the working families of this country, want economic and political change in this country that will benefit the ordinary person. So what are some of the things that we can do? Well, I think we got to think a little bit out of the box. For example, many people don't even know the name of their member of Congress. Many people don't know the name of the United States Senator. It is totally appropriate, if you are at a university, to write a letter. Dear Senator Jones, dear Senator X, we at the University of Dash are very concerned about tax breaks being given to billionaires and inadequate funding for higher education. Many of our people are going deeply into debt to go to college. We would like to invite you to University Y to come and talk to us about this issue. We will be voting in November. We look forward to your coming to our campus so that we can have this serious discussion. Something as simple as having 100 people signing a letter to a member of Congress, to a United States senator, to a governor. You have power. And if the senator writes back and says, well, I'm really busy, I can't come to your camp, we say, thank you very much, Senator. You have told us that you're not concerned about our issues. Don't bother showing up at election time, asking for our vote. So in other words, people have got to organize. That means come together. We've got to know what we're talking about. What are the issues that we're talking about? We have to know how to exert political influence. I think people do not appreciate that most members of Congress are not stupid. They want your vote. And if they believe that you know what's going on and are following issues, they're going to try to come and convince you of the correctness of what they are doing. They will come. They will come to your campus. They will come to your work site. But you've got to extend that invitation. You've got to let them know that you know what's going on. Everything being equal, many politicians hope that people don't vote, don't know what's going on, and then, you know, 2 weeks before the election, people, they do their 30-second ads and they get reelected. So, number one, organize, decide the issues you want to discuss, and bring those people right into your office. We are working on an issue of affordable housing, great affordable housing crisis in America. The National Low-Income Housing Coalition visits every congressional district in America. They walk up to the district office. They talk to the chiefs of staff, occasionally to the members. We've got over 200 co-sponsors on our legislation. So, in other words, people have got to become aggressive, reach out, and tell your member of Congress what you want. Obviously, that should carry over to elections and campaigns. You'd be surprised what 50 people, well-organized, in a congressional district can do. But the bottom line is we're going to have to reach out. We're going to have to knock on doors. We're going to have to talk to people who may not agree with us 100% on every issue.
I'm talking to Bernie Sanders today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Bernie Sanders is the U.S. representative from Vermont and has served in that function for seven terms now. We have three callers who've been extremely patient. Let's go back to the phone line right now. Hi, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thank you. Something I'm very concerned about is the move to install touchscreen voting with no paper trail to be audited, you know, in case there's some dispute after an election. And I don't think a lot of people realize that the company that supplies the software for these machines is run by very right-wing Republicans who give a lot of money to the Republican Party. And in fact, some Republican politicians are even on their board of directors. And considering that the presidential election was clearly stolen the last time, and, you know, they don't seem to have much compunction about stealing elections, I'm very worried that we may just have stolen elections from here on out if we're not careful.
Yeah, right, the caller raises a very interesting point of view that I think a lot of Americans share, especially after Florida. There is a lot of concern about the sanctity of our checklists and of the polling booth. As the caller indicates, many states are now moving to touchscreen ballots, and the fear is that they could be manipulated. At least one of the companies that is producing these touchscreen technology is a guy who went before Republicans and said, obviously in another context, you know, he said that, you know, we're going to, as a company, do everything we can to see that you guys win. He didn't mean that they were going to act illegally. I think probably give them money and so forth. But it is, I think, something that has to be watched very carefully. Congressman Russ Holt of New Jersey has introduced legislation that would provide for a paper trail in terms of the touchscreen effort. And I certainly and absolutely support that. The technology is such that it, from what I understand, can be manipulated, and we've got to be absolutely vigilant, and I will do everything I can in the Congress to see that we pass that legislation.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. Line two, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hello. Kind of going back to the earlier discussion, a couple calls ago, about who, what can, you know, people do, the answer was, you know, very thoughtful and thought out. But there are organizations that kind of, you know, use the web where basically you can just receive email to be informed about an issue and then given even the phone number of your representative if you don't know to act. And usually there are links to click for background. For instance, with moveon.org, that's the only one I know about personally, but there are lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
Get on the web, do a search. Join one of these organizations. That way you can be part of a concerted effort And as you were saying, that's organization, and it's pretty effective. But another point I wanted to make was you were talking about networks earlier, and one of them stands out. One of the television networks stands out as being perhaps, you know, beyond the others as far as not just corporate control, but actually hostile, actively hostile to, you know, liberal interest, which is maybe half the people in this country. It's Fox News. And a way that people can use their power, it would have to be organized, it would have to be concerted, and I don't know of any organization trying to attack this now, but I think Fox News should be shut out. If you're a cable subscriber and Fox News is part of your package, dump it. Call the company, tell them why. And maybe there's an organization already working on this. I don't know about one, but I thought I'd bring that up. Maybe someone even with the clout of Congressman Sanders could get the ball rolling on something like that. Maybe there are reasons why it can't be done, but I just wanted to bring up those points.
That's very good.
Thank you very much, Colin.
The caller makes some very good points. And, I mean, issues that Bob McChesney and I are working on are related to this. In other words, when you look at Fox television, the whole Fox network, everybody understands it's owned by Rupert Murdoch, who is an extreme right-wing ideologue who has tremendous influence not only in the United States, in the United Kingdom, Eastern Europe, China, Australia, and so forth. Very powerful right-wing guy. Now, interestingly enough, based from what this caller just mentioned to us, when CBS was going to put on a docudrama on the life of Ronald Reagan, and they had a quote that the conservatives weren't happy, the conservatives mobilized. My God, Ronald Reagan never would say such a hostile thing regarding AIDS or gays or whatever it was. And you know what? CBS took that program off of the air. And very often you'll find right-wing groups saying, no, we are going to boycott this sponsor who's put this program on the air. We're not sympathetic to gay rights or whatever it may be. The right wing has been effective in mobilizing and telling national broadcasters what they like and what they don't like. Meanwhile, progressive people have been much more docile, much more submissive on that entire issue. It has astounded me that for year after year, all you can hear on radio in a nation that is politically divided, I'm not saying we're a progressive nation, but we're damn well not a right-wing conservative nation, and all you can hear on radio is Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, Laura Schlesinger, on and on and on. Because where have been the half of the nation, or more than half, that voted for Al Gore, that voted for Ralph Nader, writing and calling up their local radio station to say, we're sick and tired of right-wing radio. Put something else on. Give us a balance. It almost doesn't happen. So I think the caller is right. When you look at Fox, what you should be understanding, this is not a TV network. This is an adjunct of the right-wing Republican Party, as is our number of other media organs in America, talk radio being another one. And why people are not standing up, what I said a moment ago, if 20 people call up their local radio station and say, we'd like to sit down with you, Mr. Owner, or you, the sponsor of this right-wing radio show, and talk to you, because we're not happy. We want other points of view to be heard. But that's an area of changing where we have to change the political culture, and we need some real grassroots activism.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. We're on Media Matters today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Our guest is Congressman Bernie Sanders from Vermont. Line 3, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hello. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my impression is that we are facing a revolt against the post-Soviet Union Gulf War world order, and that some groups are using terrorist acts as a tactic. But I'm wondering if you can talk about that world order and if others among us shouldn't be revolting perhaps in other ways against the Bush world order, having to do with the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon, the new conservatives who seem to have some kind of Sharon-esque or Netanyahu Israeli offensive view of the world. It is a very offensive view of the world. Can you talk a little bit about
that? Obviously, the people who have the power in the United States. And in America, we should appreciate that we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country. And what that means is not only basic unfairness, but those people in the top 1% have tremendous, tremendous power, which they exert over our economy, over our political life, over our media.
And as I think the caller indicates, this is not just an issue impacting the United States of America. It's impacting the entire world. These people think very, very boldly. They think internationally. I was just in Mexico a few weeks ago, and the devastation caused by NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, has been just terrible on millions of farmers in Mexico, millions of workers in Mexico who have seen a huge decline in their standard of living. Issues like the global economy and so-called free trade, which allows corporate America to throw American workers out on the street, go to China, hire people there at 25 cents an hour, and exert influence over the way China develops. The institutions like the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, or the World Bank, which, when they provide loans to poor countries around the world, makes stipulations that these countries have got to cut back on education, on health care, on environmental protection, have had devastating impacts on huge numbers of people all over the world. And one of the trends that is taking place is that we are seeing, in my view, the decline of even the concept of the nation state. If you are IBM, if you're General Electric, you don't see yourself anymore as an American company to be beholden or responsive to the needs of the United States. You're an international company, which literally can be moving not only your plants to China or elsewhere, but your national headquarters. You look at the world globally, and you're able to exert just tremendous influence over international organizations. The result has been is that the big are getting bigger. Large multinationals are driving out of business, small, medium-sized businesses, not only in the United States of America, but in Mexico, all over the world, because small companies, national companies, can't compete against the huge global companies. And the same thing is true for agribusiness. These institutions, to a significant degree, determine who will be in government, who will not be in government. So the concern that I have is what we're seeing is just tremendously powerful special corporate interests who are exercising unbelievable power over virtually almost every country on earth. And that's bad for the standard of living of people, and that's certainly bad for democracy and the right of the peoples of any country to be able to control their future.
We're talking to Bernie Sanders today in Media Matters. And Bernie, I think you have been maybe our single most popular guest. The phone banks are still full. We've only got a few minutes left. So I'm going to try to get to the three last callers we have on here.
Sorry, I've been going on. I've been...
You know, I think we need to do like a 24-hour telethon with you, Bernie. Maybe get Jerry Lewis and you on at the same time. But let's see what we can do here. Line four, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hi, Bob. Hello, Bernie, and I just wanted to say quickly hello to my very good friend Vic Pickard, who I know is there in the studio. But, Bernie, my wife and I recently moved from Burlington, Vermont to up here in Chicago, and we thought you were wonderful then, and we think you're wonderful now. But I wanted to quickly get your thoughts, I guess, on the recent moves by some groups to put together, I guess, a national radio network consisting of more progressive views, and what problems, I guess, if any, do you foresee them having in getting up and running, given what we know about money and media?
Okay, Bernie, I'm going to let you answer that now. And I think the caller is referring to the new network that Al Franken's going to be involved with that some people in Chicago started up.
Right. There are a couple of efforts. I'm happy to see, after, you know, I've been yelling and screaming and others have been talking about this for years, that some progressive people are finally catching on, that politics is 365 days a year. Rush Limbaugh understands that, and that we're going to have to get involved in talk radio and television as well. So one can argue whether, you know, what is the best way to spend the very significant sums of money that one needs to do these kinds of things. But there's no question, to my mind, that we need progressive voices on radio, on cable television. The Christian network and Pat Robertson should not be the only people with their own national cable network. We need to come together. I hope the unions will play a role in that. I was just talking today to somebody from the AFL-CIO voicing that opinion. So I see this as a positive development. I think, as I mentioned earlier, that we should put pressure on our local radio stations, the clear channels of the world, and say, sorry, we want to hear more than right-wing radio. We're prepared to boycott. who are prepared to turn your station off unless you do that. So taking on the media and allowing for different points of view is tremendously important, and I support those efforts.
Well, we've got two callers left, and I want to get to both of them. Line one, you're on the air with Representative Bernie Sanders.
Hello?
Hello, it's you.
It's me.
Yep.
Okay, I just wanted to say thank you for this great program, and my question is relative to term limits, this thought that comes up once in a while, and if Bernie would tell us if there would be any value in that, or what a relationship would there be between throwing career, pardon me.
No, I'm not offended.
Politicians out and going back to some shorter term limits and you know, encouraging more people to participate in Congress.
Let me give you, we don't have much time, we'll give you the brief answer. I know I'm in a little bit of a conflict of interest on that issue, but I don't support term limits. The Republicans used to support it until they got elected, and they don't support it anymore either. But the issue here is democracy, electing people who can best represent the middle class and working families of the country. My view is if you have a revolving door, if you elect people for 6 years, 8 years, they get out, you bring in new people, what you really do is strengthen the bureaucracy in corporate America, who will then educate the new crop as they come in. And the people will really not have the kind of power that sometimes incumbency and long-term incumbency can give us. So I think the answer to the limitations of democracy are not term limits, but it's campaign finance reform so that we can have public funding of elections and take on the people who are elected by big money interest.
Bernie, let's go to our last caller. Line two, you've been waiting patiently. Can you give us a short question, please?
Yes, very quickly. As opposed to time limits, what do you think of instant voter runoff? And how could it be implemented?
I believe in that. IVR is a good idea. And here's the caller raises the question of instant runoffs. The problem right now in politics in America is many people perceive the Republicans as extreme right wing. They perceive the Democrats as centrist. They want an alternative, whether in Vermont it's the Progressive Party, whether it's the Green Party, whatever it may be. But then they say, gee, if I vote for the candidate of my choice, I'm going to elect the right wing Republican. I don't want to do that. I have to compromise. Instant runoff gives you the opportunity to vote for the candidate of your choice and your second choice and your third choice and your fourth choice. So you're not, quote-unquote, wasting your vote. There are some legislatures and city councils who are dealing with this issue. It is very important.
You know what, Bernie Sanders? I'm afraid we're going to have to end it there. I hear the band tuning up in the background. That usually means it's time for me to clear out of the studio. I want to thank Bernie Sanders, U.S. Representative from Vermont, for being a guest for a terrific hour, and I know I'm speaking for all our listeners, too. Bernie, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Let's do it again. I'm Bob McChesney. I'll be back 1 week from today. Goodbye.